Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. Well, here's a conversation about getting into college that might sound familiar.
Come on, let's not freak Frankie out. I mean, the PSATs aren't the only thing that help a kid get into college. That's why Greg volunteered in the Gulf last summer, cleaning the oil off baby pelicans. Oh. And Sean interned at the Capitol.
Okay, come on, guys. They're juniors. Isn't this all a little nuts? I mean, we didn't do any of this stuff when we were kids, right?
That's from the TV show The Middle. Parents worried about their kids' grades and test scores and extracurriculars and all the resume building that now goes into a college application. But a new report from the Harvard Graduate School of Education says colleges should send a different message, one that puts the emphasis on students who invest in their communities and take care of others. Joining us in the studio to talk about the report that he authored is Richard Weisbord. He's senior lecturer and co-director of the Making Caring Common Project at Harvard's Graduate School of Education. Thanks for coming in.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Also with us is Stuart Schmill, Dean of Admissions at Massachusetts Institute of Technology. He's among those who endorsed this report called Turning the Tide. It calls for a shift in focus in the college admissions process. Stu, thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks, Deb.
And listeners, we want to tell you right now that we want to hear from you as well, and we're taking your questions. What qualities should be valued in a college student? High schoolers, what messages are you getting from the college admissions process? And parents, does the culture of the admissions process need to change? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. So, Richard, first, I'd like to start with you. Can you explain this move toward finding students who are good citizens? It's almost redefining their achievement, really. Isn't that right?
Well, these colleges are still looking for academically engaged students and academically rigorous students, but we are trying to make the case here, and, you know, it's the first time in history that this band of colleges, this large group of colleges, have made this case in a united way, made it collectively, that concern for others, concern for the common good is very important in the college application process. It's not about how many achievements you rack up. It's not about long brag sheets. So we are trying to define achievement not in terms of the length of your resume, but in terms of the quality of your engagement, your intellectual engagement, and your ethical engagement.
And so why do you think that this is happening right now and that you've gotten this large group of folks together who say that this needs to change?
Well, I think there are a few different things going on. I mean, our research, other people's research, shows that to a degree that is troubling, we have elevated achievement as the primary goal of child raising, and we have demoted or sidelined concern for others and the common good. Hmm. I think everyone is also worried about stress and depression in affluent communities.
Where do we see this? Where do we see that we've given up the concern for the common good, do you think?
Well, in our own research, you know, which is based now on over 20,000 students, we ask students to rank what's most important to you, being a happy person, caring about others, or achievement. Only about 20% of students rank caring first. We ask them to imagine, how would your parents rank those things for you? They are even less likely to think their parents would rank caring first for them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Robert Putnam's research too, other research too, has pointed to the degree to which we send these cultural messages to young people that individual achievement is important as opposed to concern for others.
Mm, but you have to fight against these cultural messages.
We have to fight against it, and I think the college admissions process is a great way to fight against it. We have very few rites of passage in this country. The college admissions process is one of the only rites of passage. It's one of the only opportunities to really send messages to young people about what adults value.
Stu, this report says the admissions process should seek to assess whether students are ethically responsible. And, of course, my first question reading this was, how in the world would you measure that with a student?
Well, there are a number of ways that we can assess that. I mean, our application process is designed to learn as much as we can about the student in their entirety. Our selection process looks not just to admit a student based on their transcript, the number of classes they've taken, and their test scores, but we look to supplement that with knowledge about the full picture of the student. And so we ask students to tell us about themselves. They write essays,
But I've been feeling like I've been hearing this for a long time, right? Mm-hmm. For maybe at least more than a decade, that schools have been saying, you know, it's really competitive. We've got to change. We've got to get a better picture of the student. How can we guarantee that we will do this in such a way that might make us get a better picture if someone is ethically responsible and a caring student?
Well, so I want to answer that in a couple of ways. First of all, I think our application is currently designed to do this, and it's both a combination of the way that students will respond and talk to us about themselves and what they're interested in. We also, as part of the application process, will receive recommendation letters, so we ask their teachers to tell us about students. And we happen to have an interview, which is part of the process as well. Not all schools do that. But so we get these multiple points of evaluation on students. And I think we get a pretty good picture on students' motivations and their interests. But I think what you said is absolutely right, Deb, that we've been doing this for a long time. And I think that the important takeaway for me, and one of the reasons I think this particular report is very important at this time, is that there really is a mismatch between what students think they need to do to get into college and what they actually need to do to get into college. And I think we as colleges really have not done a good enough job at communicating this. And I think this report is an opportunity for us to speak with one voice to get the message across of what we're actually looking at. Because you're right, this is not something that we are newly thinking about. Well, we've always had these interests. We've always wanted to enroll students who think about the common good, who are good citizens, but we haven't done a good enough job at communicating that.
I want to make sure that we have time to get some calls in, but I would like to ask you sort of what is the big thing that students should do? Should they, you know, make sure that they are finding a passion that they care about and that they are contributing back to their communities? But first, I want to remind listeners that we're taking calls for about 10 more minutes or so, and our phone number here is 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're talking about the college admissions process in a new report that says that schools should look for good citizens and it shouldn't just be completely based on achievement. There's almost a new way of defining achievement. So I want to go to Osial, who is calling from Dorchester. He's on the line right now. Osial, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing? Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, I wanted to say that it makes absolutely a lot of sense. I was someone who was admitted after being 4 years in the United States. I'm a Cuban immigrant, and it was an amazing, life-changing experience to go to Harvard on a full scholarship. And looking back, I see how my intellectual maturity was reflected in the fact that I was doing all this service. And it makes perfect sense that an institution would want to attract and to admit individuals who are intellectually mature, and it, you know, it reflects that when they're involved in service and in ethically conscious activities in high school.
Mm-hmm. And do you think, OCL, that what you saw among a lot of the students that you were at school with would suggest that a lot of students were more concerned with achievement than with giving back to the community?
Perhaps, but I must say that there were a lot of students who were on the other side of that as well and were very concerned with community affairs and social justice issues and personal growth aimed at kind of, you know, paying it forward. So I would say that I saw a little bit of both.
Okay. I want to go to Richard Weisbord, because, Richard, I think that you might be able to shine some more light on how we do measure this new, if we were to make this shift, how would we measure it among students?
So one of the things that we are recommending very strongly in the report is that there are a lot of students out there who don't have access to community service opportunities, but they are contributing to their family in very important ways. So they are working to provide family income. They're supervising younger siblings. They're taking care of sick relatives. Those kinds of contributions should count a lot, too. So one of the things we are encouraging all the colleges around the country to do is just to encourage students to report those contributions and to make explicit on applications opportunity to report those contributions. In general, as Stu said, we are also looking for changes in recommendation forms. We're asking recommenders to be specific and concrete. We are asking students to think about, if they're engaged in community service, about getting the people they're working with to write recommendations or people that they are providing a service for to write recommendations. So a variety of ways.
I want to take another call. Mike is calling from Dedham. Mike, you're on the air.
Hi, Deborah. Hi, Richard. Hi, Stu. I just wanted to make a couple of comments and then maybe ask your opinion. As a school superintendent in a community adjacent to Boston, we see a lot of stress that's placed on students trying to get into the right college and often overreaching in some of those instances. So I'm wondering what the two speakers would say about how we send the message to students that everyone has a place where they can go to college. It's not a function of getting into college, but when you lose the choice or the opportunity to control it, it sends people into crazy hysterics, like I think many people are talking about, and the function of the paper that's been written. So what advice do you give to students and families about the fact that there are over 4,000 colleges that are available in the United States, and there is a right college for everyone?
Stu, I think, okay, thanks, Mike. Thanks very much for your call. Stu, I want to ask you that because I'm sure with a brand like MIT that there are lots of students who say, I want to go to MIT. They think that it is the college, and maybe it isn't the best fit. So how do you, what do you say to Mike's point? How do you give advice around that?
Yeah, thanks. And actually, yeah, Mike, that's a terrific, terrific point. And you're right. There are a number of students out there who think MIT, if they don't go to MIT, that's it. Their life's going to be over. Mm. And the reality is that is not true. Education is not something that is done to you. Education is something that you do. And you can get a great education wherever you pursue it. And you can also get a poor education wherever you pursue it. And I think it's really important for students to remember that there are many, many colleges out there. There are hundreds of colleges. At any one of them, students can be just as successful, provided they put in. It's all about the effort, the engagement that they put in. Mm. And, you know, there are so many examples of that. So I think, you know, Mike's point is a really good one and really important for us all to remember when we're advising and guiding students is that their education that they get is really up to them. And they can get a great education at any number of places.
Richard Weisbord, what do you say about this right college idea?
You know, I think some parents, and I speak as a parent, you know, I had three kids who went, who were in college or past college. I think a lot of parents out there have a kind of fever. I mean, they think there are a handful of colleges that are the royal roads to Rome, the keys to success. And as Stu says, it's just not true. There are hundreds of good colleges out there, and parents really have to figure out what's the right place, or students have to figure out with guidance from parents what's the right place for them.
Hmm. All right, I want to take some more calls. Catherine is calling from Arlington. Catherine, you're on the air.
Hi there. I'm wondering, with parents who are willing to spend tens of thousands of dollars on people to guide their kids through the admission process, how is this going to actually change anything? Isn't it just going to change the marketing spin that instead of sending the kids, you know, overseas to dig holes in Africa, they're going to be marketing the kids to local projects?
So they'll be ethically responsible. Good question. I'm wondering, Stu, how would you ferret out kids who will figure out how to game the system because the system is so competitive already, and that is not going to change?
Yeah, I think, as I said earlier, we get multiple touch points on how we evaluate students, and we really corroborate them. And so we hear what the student is telling us, we hear what the teachers are telling us, we hear what happens in our interview, and we make sure all of those match up together. And we can tell when students are being packaged. We're really looking for the core, the actual student themselves. And I have to say that it really is disappointing to me, the industry that has grown up around college admissions and parents paying, in some cases, a lot of money really to package their students up. And I think it's destructive, not just in terms of the process and whether we can tell or not, which I think we can, but I think it sends a really a destructive message to their own children, that their children are not good enough as they are. Right. And that they need to be packaged up. And I think that is, I think that's a very important point that I hope maybe that part of the conversation can come out as part of this report.
And maybe you have a way of feeling that you look at candidates more holistically when they're trying to get into MIT, but maybe not every school does. So, Richard, I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that, because if you create a new way for folks to be measured by the system, will you still have, because it's such a competitive system, a way for folks looking to game the system and maybe not representing the student as accurately as possible just so they can get in?
Well, I think Stu is right, and I am new to this world of college admissions over the last year or so, but I've gotten to know some of the college admissions officers, and I, you know, from everything they tell me, I think they are quite astute about authentic and inauthentic applications. But I will also say that many people are going to game the system. I mean, I think that's the reality out there. And I think one of the things we're trying to say is if you're going to try and game it, we want to motivate you to do some things that actually might be beneficial for you. And it isn't about a stint in Belize or Costa Rica. It is about, for example, working in groups on community problems, having experiences of diversity across race, class, culture, political orientation, and religious orientation. And doing it for a sustained period of time, doing it for a year or so. And, you know, the research seems to show that even if it's encouraged or motivated, sometimes for the wrong reason, those kind of experiences can still be transformative and beneficial for you. Mm. So that's why we're encouraging those kind of experiences.
We have phone lines completely lit up here. So Julie is calling from Marblehead. Julie, you're on the air.
Hi. I just got done with the college process with my teenage son, and I think one of the number one thing that colleges themselves could do, would be to delist from the U.S. News and World Report
rankings, the rankings of the colleges.
Such a false picture of what colleges are acceptable, and I think it just gets the competitive juices going where they don't need to be going.
And why is that? Why do you think that, Julie? I mean, was there some school that was rated really well, and then you went there and thought that it really wasn't what it was described to be, or what made you think that the rankings from U.S. News and World Report weren't what they're all cracked up to be?
Well, yeah, that was true. We visited some schools that we thought, well, what's the big deal? But no, I think that there are some parents and some students who say, I can only go to these top five ranked schools because I've always been the best, and I can only achieve my best there at these top schools.
Right. That was sort of what we heard about this idea about the right school. What about the rankings? Richard, what do you think? How do they affect the process?
Well, I may bounce this one to Stu.
Okay.
Just because no one I know is really a fan of the rankings, but I would love to hear Stu's inside view about this.
Okay, we've got just about a minute left. Yeah. Sorry, Stu.
Well, that's okay. I just briefly just say I agree with the caller. I think that I think families and should not be guided by the rankings in terms of thinking that there's some ordinal ranking of colleges. Really, colleges is all about fit. Mm. And so when you're thinking about the sets of colleges where you think you might be interested in attending, you want to make your own set of rankings based on the things that are important to you, not some artificial rankings from some relatively defunct news organization.
All right. Well, we will have to revisit this conversation because we have callers that we won't be able to fit. Stuart Schmill, Dean of Admissions at Massachusetts Institute of Technology, thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Also, Richard Weisbord, Senior Lecturer and Co-Director of the Making Caring Common Project at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. Thanks to you as
Thank you so much.
And finally today, because it is Friday after all, we wanted to play a bit more of that parody we heard during the first part of our show. It's from Late Night with Seth Meyers, where he put together a trailer for a fictional movie called Boston Accent, spoofing on so many things Boston.
Loaded with geographical references to cities and towns in Massachusetts and the greater Boston area.
I can meet you in an hour in Worcester.
How about Medford?
How about Dorchester?
How about Gloucester?
How about Taunton?
I'm a cousin Ax from Taunton.
Wicked. Wicked. So do you want to meet there?
Nah, how about Weymouth?
What about Brockton?
How about Swampscott?
All right, where are we meeting? Braintree.
That conversation goes on for 10 minutes. Featuring 75 new songs from the Dropkick Murphys that all sound like this.
And we'll go out today with some Dropkick Murphys. You can find a link to that video on our website, radioboston.org. That's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Deborah Becker. Have a great weekend, and join us again Monday for more Radio Boston. I'm a